You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode number 163 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
And we have some news.
We do. It's some exciting news. We have a sponsor of sorts. Please welcome.
A sponsor of sorts.
Yeah. Please welcome our new sponsor, Tavour.
Of sorts.
Tavour is an app that offers craft beers that aren't distributed nationwide for purchase.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
None of these beers are distributed? Or, like, you can't just go buy these beers?
Other than the quarterfinals, which, nice setup you got there,
FIFA. I honestly never really understood what it was.
Among FIFA's top. We're doing this because I will explain, most like most of the Pelton cast, I will explain it to you as well as the listener. Breweries like Buckle Down Brewery in Chicago, the makers of the much-loved Xavier McDaniel IPA that we discussed a few weeks ago, make their beers available to Tavour. You order the ones you like, and they'll be shipped together on a regular basis for a flat shipping cost. I came across Tavour. I was looking at a brewery. I was actually looking up the Pelton Malt that we discussed last week on the Pelton Cast. And one of the beers that was made with it was distributed through them. So that's how I came across this.
So it's exclusively distributed through Tavour, these beers?
I mean, you can purchase them locally. But these are...
You're saying that they have beers that can't, because of distribution laws,
but
this beer cannot be purchased
to the people
in Washington State. However, if it's through a private club like Tavour, then you can get it.
That's my understanding. I don't want to speak to the logistics and the legalities.
Hello.
I'm not the famous cousin Katie. I'm not our legal counsel on the podcast. I don't know how many you have. I can't verify this. Damon, definitely legal counsel for us. Anyways, I'm none of those people, so I don't want to speak to the...
So far, he just counsels us on puns and great tweets.
Oh, of course. We appreciate that as well. I don't want to speak to the exact logistics of... But as far as I understand, the beer that we're drinking here, I can't imagine that you're going to go out to a store, even like a Total Wine, and be able to get this. It's smaller breweries that don't distribute nationwide, generally speaking.
That's really interesting.
So I immediately saw this as a natural partnership, because do you know where Tavour is based?
Where are they based?
Tukwila.
Hello!
Right near the Costco that I go to on every 2 weeks to go get gas.
There we go. I mean, that's right near the Mario Segale, what do they call it? There's a name for it.
There's various locations, but yes.
I mean, this is old school Italian property that they're on here.
It's, you know, not far from the Duwamish River, you know, down the river from where the Carasino family farm used to be,
mm-hmm.
low these many years ago before it turned into a park.
Yeah, we could have started Tavour.
We will be drinking beer curated for us by Tavour on the pod each week, and you can take advantage too.
Wow.
If you sign up for an account with Tavour and enter the code PeltonCast in the promos section, you'll get $10 credit after spending $25 with Tavour. So that's, they have the, you can do this online, but they also have an app that makes it much easier to look at everything and order beers, and that's where you can enter the promo code in the promos section.
And so the promo code is PeltonCast?
It is PeltonCast.
Okay. Promo code CAPSPACE.
It's easy to remember.
What if we just would have had the promo code BCAPSPACE?
It would rule out the possibility of Dunkdon ever doing a partnership with them, so we wouldn't want to do that.
We'd make them have their promo code be PeltonCast.
Third Pelton brother, Nate Duncan.
And that's Tavour, spelled T-A-V-O-U-R.
Yes.
It's like tavern and devour.
Or maybe like tavern and poor, and maybe we're mispronouncing it horribly. It's something. It's somewhere in there. Okay, so we should drink the beer that Tavour has curated for us this week, because we've got, as usual, a lot of toast to get to.
Oh, hello. Well, so I guess the one last thing, and not to shill for Tavour, I'm actually learning this firsthand from you, is that we're going to be drinking a lot of beers that are sort of outside of our normal comfort zone of kind of like Seattle and Northwest-based beers. We're going to be drinking a lot of beers that are much more nationally based now.
Yes.
And I guess the other thing is that we're going to be able to be a lot more pretentious about it.
Oh, 100% more pretentious.
So what are we drinking today?
Well, we have here from Adroit Theory Brewing Company in Vint Hill, Virginia.
Lovely place.
Abandon all hope.
Would love to spend a weekend there alone.
Hazy Imperial IPA. So here's a sample of the emails that you get from Tavour describing the beers. Friends, if you've been following the Tavour app, you've likely heard us talk about how lucky we are to get beers from Adroit Theory. The brewery's diehard Black Heart Society Bottle Club makes sure that most of AT's beers sell out before they even finish brewing them.
Wow.
The brewery gets a lot of inquiries for access to pre-sales, but they have to limit it to their members-only club, and there's a year-long wait list to get on that. So when new fans come thirsty for a taste, all Adroit can tell them is, you should probably abandon all hope. Today is a rare chance for you to snag their aptly named Crazy Dank Abandon All Hope Double IPA. Get your hands on one, and you'll prove to the rest of us that finding it is possible. This thing is chock full of hop juice with the flavors of Sticky Icky Papaya, Watermelon Kush, Red Berries, Orange Peel, and Sweet Evergreen. One sip, and Abandon will wash away your dry mouth with a big juicy bite of fresh tropical fruit. The brewery put this 8.1% ABV blast of resin into tall cans, which is a new swagger for Adroit. Now in a super portable package, its freshness is locked in. Looks like the accessibility of these nano brews just went from only found in Virginia to even Virginians should abandon all hope of getting a taste. And this is packaged on June 5th.
This is crazy fresh. Also, yes. The first time that I've ever heard a 16-ounce can be described as swagger.
Same here.
I love that there's a cigar pairing on the back, too.
What is the cigar pairing?
A Monte Crisco Nicaragua Series Robusto.
The cheese pairing is Romano Pradera.
I feel like those are all the words that I know that are related to cigars. You gotta get a Robusto.
Okay, so our first toast.
I guess we should do a toast to our good friends at Tavour.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah. All right, a toast to our friends at Tasteful Profanity, a Beast Pod production, which on Monday announced a live podcast on Friday, August 16th at Fuel Sports Beats and Eats, featuring, checks notes, us.
Hello!
We're returning the favor for Tasteful Profanity guesting on last year's live Pelton cast. So we're going to be going back there and trying to lower the quality.
I mean, we mentioned this may be a summer of live Seahawks podcasts. Following, you've got the Mina Kimes show featuring Lenny sold out at the Crocodile.
In July.
You have August 16th. If you didn't get a ticket to that, you can come and see Tasteful Profanity Beast Pod production live featuring the fine folks at Dome and Bedlam, which I assume is a baseball podcast.
Yes, that is America's
and
podcast.
Also, the fabulous Pelton cast. It'll be a chance to drink heavily with us.
That's true.
Mini Rainier Tallboys will be consumed. The swag of a Rainier Tallboy.
Well, I don't know if we can assume that. Not every place stocks Rainier Tallboys. We found out last year.
Barboza doesn't have Rainier Tallboys?
They do not.
Wow, a shame. Maybe we should never do another live podcast there again.
So that show will be, it's a Friday night, 7:30 p.m. Tickets available on beastpod.com with half of proceeds going to the Michael Bennett Foundation.
There we go.
So be sure to get your tickets if you haven't already.
Which Seahawk player or ex-Seahawk player foundation is Mina Kimes supporting?
That's a good question.
Really makes you think, doesn't it?
But there are live Seahawks-related podcasts now scheduled in July and August. That leaves September open.
We're really good at teasing stuff.
Are we?
So good.
All right, next
the main
up.
Thing is that now that we have one sponsor, expect a lot more sponsors.
It's
every
be...
single segment. This is going to be Mariners Hot Takes sponsored by Pfizer. just you wait until the Sounders section is sponsored by Kaiser Permanente. We need a packaged food that you get delivered. Which Sunbasket?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The Sonics Arena section sponsored by Sunbasket.
It's gonna be great.
The outtakes sponsored by Simply Safe. The bonus content.
All right, next up. Speaking of Seahawks Twitter, a toast to Sean Clement, aka Sean from CBEC, hired by the Baltimore Ravens, as he announced on Tuesday, as
our
a quantitative
Baltimore
analyst.
Ravens.
I mean, they have him and Earl Thomas. They definitely got to be our AFC team for sure.
I mean, I've already kind of liked the Ravens for a long time.
Also, they no longer have Joe Flacco at quarterback, which is a big positive.
Yeah.
I'm very ready to root for them with a young mobile quarterback.
Are you not remembering his name either?
You know,
Lamar Jackson.
I wanted to call him Tavares Jackson was the problem.
I was like Robert Griffin III?
I mean, for the record, if an NFL team signed T-Jack, 100% would support that team.
Look, this is
undefeated in coin tosses.
This is deep off-season for the NFL, in my opinion. We are in the throes of the off-season. I'm not supposed to remember who the quarterback for the Ravens is.
I don't know how much we'll talk about this later in this podcast, but also a toast to the Italian women's soccer team for winning Group C in the World Cup.
Oh, should we also toast to the...
They haven't... The U.S. women's national team?
Yeah.
They haven't won their group.
Yeah, there we go.
So, man, call us when you do that. Call us when you win.
Show up.
Call us when you win your group by losing 1-0 to Brazil.
Do you think that was an intentional 1-0 loss?
No.
They just lost.
I mean, a draw would certainly have been sufficient. And given their massive goal differential.
A tasteful loss.
A 1-goal loss was pretty much always going to be good enough. But they were going forward. It was not, like, they apparently hadn't learned any lessons from the Italian men's team, which would have just played.
You just said Italians and going forward.
I know. It was
in a deciding game. I don't like anything about that.
They had some opportunities to score. Conceded a somewhat dubious penalty, I'll say.
Oh, and that's how Brazil won?
Yeah.
Oh, I feel good about that heading into the knockout stages.
You should.
And since it may happen, can we pre-toast to the USWNT? Because I just, at the very least, I think they're reaching the knockout stages.
They have clinched reaching the knockout stages with their plus 16 goal differential after the 13-0 win over Thailand. I mean, the real take is the U.S. should throw this match against Sweden so they get on the other side of the bracket from France. That's the real take.
Would they fall?
That's too hot. You're not getting that on the mainstream media.
Yeah.
You only get that in the Pelton.
Take that, Raj and Devo. What is the mainstream media? Who's that? Like Taylor Twelman's not telling you this. Is that the mainstream media? If they do lose to Sweden by any amount, if they lose that match to Sweden, will they then go on to the other side of the bracket?
They would be second in the group because Sweden also is on 6 points entering that match.
Man.
Turns out Thailand and Chile may not be as good as the U.S. and Sweden.
I think the U.S. should consider a tasteful 1-0 loss.
It's the only... I mean, it's not their mentality at all. They would never do it, but they really kind of should.
I mean, whatever. You're going to have to play France at some point.
True, but it'd be more fun if it were in the final. Than in the quarterfinals. It's going to be kind of lame if the two best teams play each other in the quarterfinals, which, hey, nice setup you got there, FIFA. Not that that's like among FIFA's top 500 problems.
This is your gripe with FIFA. Yeah,
I finally found the flaw with FIFA. I've been searching a long time.
Nailed it.
I found it. I found my problem with the NCAA tournament, which is the West region doesn't only feature teams from the West part of the country. Wow.
Yeah, exposed.
Take that, NCAA.
Oh, man. That thing about the NCAA, about there's going to be like a massive, like a bunch of programs are going to get exposed. Have you heard about this? That was going to happen?
Dubious.
You don't think it's going to go down? Or if it does happen, the chances of Arizona being one of those schools.
Sean Miller's still the coach. I mean, as far as I could tell, Sean Miller could be coaching through the zombie apocalypse.
I was going to say, he's reaching the era of like a Keith Richards joke. Well, congrats to Sean. What we meant to say was congrats to Sean. Did we already get through that? We were toasting the Italian.
Yeah, we did.
National
team. We had moved on. We had discussed Lamar Jackson.
But go Ravens.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to say.
Should we talk about Seattle's best sandwich? Our search for it?
Sure.
So after playing pickup basketball earlier this evening, we headed over to Royal Grinders in Fremont. We went in the shadow of the Lenin statue there.
Here's the kind
controversial
of content that people want.
Lenin statue.
You and I matched up a lot during basketball, right?
A fair amount, yeah.
How many points did you score?
I mean, that's not really my game.
Zero. Shut you down.
I mean, I scored four the entire game, in the entire night between like six games.
I was like Kawhi Leonard out there against you. I'm the Kawhi Leonard of giving you space to shoot.
You're the Kawhi Leonard of defending the worst offensive player on the other team.
Most importantly, the content that people are looking for, I scored at least three buckets against you.
You took advantage several times when I went to go help off of you to other players, which is to your credit, because I can't do that.
Oh, man. The
Also, your team went like 5-1 against my team.
And we were talking after. There were some players on our team who shot like, well, like NBA level percentages from three. But I was, you had told us that you don't let players get lost or whatever. You don't lose players. If somebody's playing well, you're not going to forget about somebody and let them get open. And
yeah,
I poked a hole in your whole argument right there.
No, I meant good players, which is why when I switched off of you onto the shooter, it was lighting up for the outside. She did not get many open looks from the outside once I got on her. Got some layups because you can definitely beat me off the dribble, but I'm just not going to give you open threes.
Raps in six.
So Royal Grinders. I had been there one time before, also after playing pickup basketball. And I got to tell you, it was a pretty distinctly unmemorable experience the one time I went to Royal Grinders.
Okay.
Had you been before?
Yes.
What did you think previously?
It was a long time ago. I remember, I thought the sandwich that I had then, the two things that I remember were that I thought it took a long time.
That seems to be a defining characteristic of Royal Grinders.
It didn't like take that long today.
We also weren't doing it at lunch rush.
There was basically
it may be
no
much longer at that point.
And then also, to me, we've talked about this, food that takes a long time is not bad.
It's if it's also a long line and then it takes a long time?
No, I don't mind my food taking a long time because it means that it's being made with care.
Okay.
And it means that it's being made like distinctly for me. At the same time, I love Jimmy John's and how freaky fast it is. I'm for that too. But we'll talk about national sandwiches later because there's two different approaches there. But I want, that's why I like.
Just two?
Between like taco time, sometimes people complain about how long taco time takes for a fast food restaurant. I'm like, they're making it fresh.
Right.
There are not a bunch of tacos in the back that are already made.
Sitting under heat lamps.
Yeah. So I'm okay with that. I don't mind that these sandwiches take a long time. At the same time, I don't remember anything about the sandwiches from before. It was just like a mostly uneventful experience.
But when we mentioned Royal Grinders to the people we were playing basketball with, one person unprompted said how much they loved the place.
Mm-hmm.
And then your friend David told us that he was the first employee ever of them.
A lot happened in that moment.
We were unable to verify that by the list of former employees who get free food on the wall, which he was omitted from.
Yeah, we maybe verified that he wasn't the first employee.
But he seems to know a lot about the place to not have worked there. So I do take his word for it. So I went with the namesake Royal Grinder,
mm-hmm.
which was roast beef and ham. And then all of their grinders come with a variety of accoutrements, both provolone and Swiss, I believe.
Oh, hello.
And then their grinder sauce.
And then I had their pastrami sandwich, which is basically like a Reuben type sandwich. But I got both of the sauces, both the green and the red sauce. I could see it making sense on a lot of sandwiches because I like a lot of sauce. I don't know if the red sauce fit with the pastrami sandwich.
The red sauce is like a marinara, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is strange.
It didn't taste bad. It's just, I don't know, because it already had the mustard, like sort of like
right.
The ground mustard. That you would normally have on like a Reuben plus the two sauces. It was kind of just a lot of flavors mingling in there.
I would say I distinctly did not have enough sauce on my sandwich. That was my biggest complaint by far.
Could add both sauces. I mean, David was their first ever employee. He told me to get both sauces. I'm getting both sauces.
Oh, that was his advice. Okay, yes. I didn't hear that. Well, what did you think besides for that?
It's a good sandwich, right? Like I enjoyed eating it. I think the whole preparation, the bread that it comes on is crunchy but soft.
Yep.
Which is what I'm looking for. It's a good flavor of bread. Like everything involved is high quality. You can tell that there's care made with it.
I don't think the meat is the highest quality.
The meat didn't stand out as much as it could have, I guess I'll say. Like, I mean, if we're talking like swinery meat, which is probably the highest quality meat we've had.
Or even though it just no longer exists, but Hitchcock Deli, I feel like that was really high quality meat.
This is kind of just deli meat.
Yes.
But it's just like, it's good. It's not like it's bad food that you're eating, right? And altogether, it's just like, it's a pretty good sandwich.
Yeah.
It's not amazing. It's not bad. It's not necessarily that unique.
I mean, I think it's, I wouldn't say it's fairly different from other sandwiches that we've had.
I guess that's true. I don't know. There's just something where I'm like, okay, like Tats Deli, I'm not really getting this anywhere else. And I feel like I'm like meeting my sandwich needs that like at places that are not Royal Grinders.
I feel like Royal Grinders falls into the quality neighborhood sandwich category to me.
Yeah.
And we've done a few of those places. Elliott Bay Pizza Company to me is one of those. I think
Tubbs. Went to Elliott Bay Pizza Company?
Yeah, you know, there's one on the top of Queen Anne Hill.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think Tubbs probably falls into that category.
That's the thing that it reminded me of the most is Tubbs. Where it's like, this is a good sandwich, but it's not a remarkable sandwich.
I initially scored it the exact same as Tubbs and then decided to put it 1 point behind it in the standings. So I gave it an 87.
With our grades are so high.
my grades in particular are very high.
I'm going to give it an...
It's unlike my trade grades.
I'm going to give it an 80.
Okay.
It is like, it's a sandwich place that I would go back to. I wouldn't mind going back there, but I'm not going to seek it out if I'm in Fremont. I would honestly rather have sour dumplings.
Okay.
So.
All right, let's talk about Seattle sports.
Well, let's talk about the song of the summer.
Oh.
I mean, the people are out there asking us to talk about the song of the summer.
First off.
The listener.
Let's talk about not the song of the summer, because there is none. But yes, we did get a request for this question. Oh, no, I have to scroll down below all of the Tasteful Profanity live podcast replies.
Friday, August 16th, tastefulprofanity.com or whatever.
It really was the most action the Peltoncast Twitter has seen in a long time when we got tagged in that tweet announcing it. That was, of course, from our friend Natasha Howard fan account.
Hello.
At Big Paper Daddy, formerly... Tristan was right, mm-hmm. or the listener agrees with Tristan, I feel mm-hmm. like.
Yeah.
I think. What were some of his other names?
That's the only one I remember.
Of course. Of course, that's the only one you remember. One of our favorite, the listener, but asked, when are you guys going to talk about, are you guys going to do a podcast talking about the song of the summer?
How about right now?
And I replied, not until one is released.
I guess if we're going to get into this here, your argument just doesn't even make any sense. But your argument is a semantics issue, right? So if we're talking Song of the Summer, I've got a few candidates for you.
Okay.
Five? Four? Four candidates. So
I don't know how many you have. I can't verify this.
I'm thinking over here. It's chill. So Taylor Swift puts out... No.
Okay, I was about to veto it off the top, but you beat me to it.
Okay. On the obvious end, right... And this is where you get into semantics. But to me, the obvious answer is obviously Old Town Road. But are you going to argue that that's not the song of the summer?
Because it came out too early? I think that's probably the case.
You're acting like you were unaware of this is even a concept.
That Old Town Road could be the song of the summer?
Yeah.
No, I'm aware of it.
Okay.
It came up on the Friday mailbag last week, I think.
Oh, were they talking about the song of the summer?
I think they were.
Oh, I'm curious what their other thoughts were.
Yeah, I have a tough time remembering.
Mm-hmm. Super engaged.
do an hour and a half. There's a lot going on.
Sometimes a lot more than that.
I had three comments in a tweet about it. Okay, just play off there.
You talked about the song of the summer in that tweet, didn't you?
No, I don't think I did.
Okay.
Did I?
Okay, so like if...
I talked about Jake One. Third Pelton Brother Jake One.
Maybe Tuxedo's out there releasing the song of the summer.
Could be.
So I... If you want to exclude Old Town Road, I understand. But if there's one song from this summer that we're going to remember long term, that's going to be the song.
If there's one song from 2019 we're going to remember long term, it's going to be that song. But okay.
So you fully do not think this falls into the category?
I don't think it's eligible.
Because it peaked too early?
Yes. All right, give me the other three candidates.
Okay. The other song, which I feel like sort of falls into the same sort of idea as Old Town Road, is the song Bad Guy by Billie Eilish.
Yeah. Do you think it's going to be quite mainstream enough to be the song of the summer?
It was on a Blazers playoff broadcast.
That's true. I feel
that's
like
how I judge mainstream or not.
I mean, the song of the summer, you have to, when you go to Vegas next month.
And do you think they're not going to be playing Old Town Road by the pool?
Oh, they're going to be playing Old Town Road. I'm not disputing that. I'm not sure if they're going to be playing Billie Eilish by the pool while you're in the cabana.
I really wonder about that one.
I mean, we'll find out. We'll report back.
That one, I guess I agree. Yeah, maybe not. Like, realistically, like, they're probably going to be playing the new Katy Perry song in the pool, but that's not the song of the summer.
It could be. I don't think it's probably going to be. All right, what are your other two candidates?
My other two candidates.
You're going to be playing a lot of Pitbull by the pool, if I know anything about the Vegas pool.
Calaiocho. The other candidate, and this is what Baby Fantasy Genius would choose as his song of the summer, is the song Earthquake by Tyler, the Creator.
Great song. Do you think it's going to be like mainstream enough to qualify as song of the summer?
It's definitely moving. Like, hearing it be played on Cube 93 is something that I was not expecting.
Right. It could break through. It's just a little early to say.
So I'm looking at, I mean, like, is it going to be as popular as some of the other songs of the summer that we've talked about in the past? Maybe not. But is this going to be a song? Like, when I listen to Tyler, the Creator record, I'm like, he created, I guess, no pun intended. He released to me, like, the next best Kanye West record since Kanye's been releasing bad records.
Don't demean Tyler, the Creator like that. Don't stain him with that. Okay. We've gone over Kanye on this podcast in the past.
It was
Baby Fantasy Genius has delivered some Kanye takes.
It was like,
yeah, Mrs. Fantasy Genius.
It sounds to me, the whole record, and like the musicality of it also. Like, on that song, I don't think Tyler raps on that song.
Uh-huh.
Like, just the musicality of the entire record is just like, you have released a record that is like what it sounds to me like peak Kanye. And this is the track from it. A track that has managed to break through to mainstream radio and that people hear it and they love it instantly, right?
Yeah.
And it's that one is going to keep moving throughout the summer. I think it's more like, you know, there's like a song in the summer as far as like a pop song, and then sometimes there's like a song in the summer as more of like a like hipster song in the summer.
Yes.
This has the lane for it.
It's like Jamie XX was probably more likely the hipster song of the summer. Yes. It 3 years ago or whatever that was.
Yes.
Did you know that there's a like a number on these cans, like the number that they're bottled out of?
Wow.
5364 out of 6700. I just discovered that. Do you want to know the reason that there is not a song in the
Wait,
summer
I got
yet?
One more candidate for you.
Oh, you do.
The other
so there was five. Oh, no,
four.
There were four.
This
there
is four. I'm looking through at like
podcast math.
At like festival lineups and stuff like that, seeing who's playing like festivals this summer, what's really happening at certain times. And another artist that's just broken through to mainstream radio play, and that's Lizzo with the song Truth Hurts.
Very possible. Yeah.
I don't know if you're going to have the sort of like ubiquity that you're talking about for the song of the summer, but this is another one that could just keep growing.
Yeah.
Like, this is one where you'll be watching like sports broadcasts or whatever.
Vikings broadcast.
This is going to be bumper music at some point in the NBA draft. Hmm. There's a bold prediction for you.
I'm going to take the under on that one.
When it's played, you're going to be paying attention. You're going to be like, oh, shit.
There may be a trade, and I may have to mute the broadcast so I can write about it. So
we'll okay, see. Well, somebody tell us.
Yeah. I'm sure the listener will tweet us at that point.
So that's another one where, I mean, it could be another thing where it's like maybe it's a little bit more in like the hipster song in the summer. Right. Territory, but these are not small songs, either of these.
Do you want to know the reason there's no song in the summer yet?
Why?
Because Drizzy ain't released nothing yet, other than his Raptors championship song the other day, which I have not listened to and assume is probably not going to be the song. Maybe in Canada
there were
it'll
two.
Be the song of the summer.
There were two, and they had nothing to do with like
the Raptors.
They weren't like, it wasn't like, who's the Kings of the West Side? This was not Drizzy's Not in Our House.
Fair.
This is not going to be a voicemail recording at our house in 1994.
1993. It seems unlikely. My point is, not about those tracks in specific, but more that the song of the summer is always by Drake, because Drake makes amazing songs for the summer.
Like, the Raps may have won in 6. This may be a Drake summer, but I'm just not willing to say that every song of the summer is by Drake. What about Gnarls Barkley? Is Drake in Gorillaz?
You understand the Gnarls Barkley, that the Crazy came out 13 years ago, right?
Those to me, there are obviously other songs of the summer. We've talked about this before, though. Summers 2005 and 2006?
2005 was the Gorillaz summer?
Maybe they were both. I think they might have been both the same summer.
No, I think you're right. The Gorillaz was 2005. And obviously Crazy was 2006 because it was the same time as Italy won the World Cup.
Obviously.
Goes without saying.
I think there's a chance that we may have been blessed with both Feel Good Inc. and Crazy in the same summer. But maybe they were consecutive summers. But most importantly, Drake is not in Gnarls Barkley.
Can confirm. Any other thoughts on Song of the Summer? Are we going to do our top songs of the first half of 2019 at some point?
I thought we did that early July.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, of course.
Traditionally, we've done it when I'm at Summer League or right afterwards. It was 2005, by the way, for Feel Good Inc.
But what about Crazy? Are you sure it was 2006?
I don't even need to look it up. I will, just to satisfy you. But don't question my memory when it comes to real life.
Find out when
events.
It was released, though, because that's...
All right, that is a fair question. Released March 13th.
That's about when the Old Town Road really hit, like a week after I got back from South by Southwest. I mean, the thing about these songs is that they grew throughout the summer.
Right.
And Old Town Road kind of hit its peak earlier.
Right.
The Old Town Road peak was in like maybe early May, right when the Billy Ray Cyrus remix came out.
Yep.
So that I'll agree with. But also, if we're talking a song that peaked in May, like, that's the song of the freaking summer. And so here's the other question is.
But something may come along to surpass it, is my point.
Yes. We may not know at this point. Lil Nas X has an EP coming out on Friday.
Does he?
That may be full of mini songs of the summer.
Or it may be no good songs. I think that's very possible.
Oh, I'm so in on Lil Nas X. More than I've basically ever been in on any artist with like a similar profile.
And with Lil in his name?
No, with like, you don't think I fuck with Lil Xan? No. But for an artist that has like one like major hit that came out of nowhere, Lil Nas X knows how to handle it better than any artist has ever known how to handle it.
I guess we'll find out Friday.
He doesn't have to have other good music though. He's got Twitter.
True. That's a good point.
Do you follow him on Twitter?
I don't.
Wow. You should go just dig through Lil Nas X's Twitter because he is excellent at it.
I'm aware that he knows how to use the internet.
Oh man, he knows how to use the internet maybe better than any person, even better than Mina Kimes. Maybe better than any person has ever known how to use the internet.
I don't know. Is he on a Ringer post show?
I think they would have him.
I'm sure they would take him. That's a good point.
If he wanted to do Big Little Lies.
Big Little Live.
Big Little Live. I think they would allow in any show. After the Thrones. Big Little Lies, I mean, the press box.
I hate
Lil Nas X would do any of it.
I hate to break it to you. They're not doing After the Thrones anymore. The show has ended. Should we talk about Seattle sports?
All right.
The Sounders are still...
Let us know, I guess, before then. I feel like I've cut you off a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Let us know if there are songs of the summer that we're forgetting. And we may hear a very obscure song in the summer later on from the babiest of fantasy geniuses.
I look forward to hearing that. So the Sounders are not playing currently because it's an MLS international break.
Thank God.
But that did not stop them from having bad news.
Oh, no.
At training on Tuesday, Will Bruin left practice with what has not yet been confirmed, but multiple sources indicating, according to Sounder Heart, that Will Bruin suffered an ACL injury in training, though the severity of the injury is not yet confirmed.
Mm.
If it is a rupture of the ACL.
Just a totally mild ACL injury.
I mean, this is something I was talking about last week after the Klay Thompson injury. There's not really low-grade ACL sprains that I'm familiar with. Like, you can have just, like, a light MCL sprain, but you can't apparently do that with your ACL.
dog for real.
So anyways, in training, Bruin collided with backup goalkeeper Brian Meredith and was carted off. And this is bad news for the Sounders because the timing, I mean, obviously you never want to see a key player like Will Bruin suffer this kind of injury, but the timing is particularly bad. It's the Sounders' primary two forwards, Raul Ruiz Diaz and Jordan Morris, both on duty with their national teams and almost certainly will still be there when the MLS season... it's the MLS season.
The Major League Soccer season.
Okay, yeah. When MLS resumes play on June 29th, the Sounders at least resume play on June 29th. So the only other forward on the roster is newly signed homegrown player Alfonso Ocampo Chavez. So
how old is he?
I think he's 18.
Okay.
Maybe 19. He's not quite as young as Danny Leyva. But then maybe he's 17.
It is. This whole Sounders season has been really weird.
Yeah.
I mean, the confidence we went into it with, but this is like...
Well, the justified confidence based on the early results. Oh, 17.
Schmetz's job
for this AOC
a year ago was in question, right?
Yeah.
Like, extremely. If you would have had to wager at this time a year ago, especially when we got to the 4th of July, what the chances...
Right, run off the season.
Yeah, you'd written off the season. The chances of Schmetz returning or Garth Lagerwey returning were pretty slim at that point. And I'm telling you right now, I think they have a very good chance of things going very haywire this year. I think this could be the season where there's a real shakeup within the Sounders.
I mean, if things do go haywire, it's going to be because of these injuries.
Is it?
Yeah. The team was really good at the start of the season. I don't know if you saw that.
I mean, I guess the reality is it doesn't matter why. Have you ever paid attention to soccer? People come and go so fast.
I don't think that's true. I don't think that's going to be as true with the Sounders, given their legacy of success, given Brian Schmetzer's history with this organization, dating back to is a player in the NASL. I don't think they're going to callously toss him aside. They also they lost three matches in a row, all on the road. Going into the international break, they haven't lost matches in the future yet. Like Raul Ruiz Diaz is coming back. Like they're not going to Peru is not going to play in the Copa America forever. Probably not even that deep into July. So I think it's going to be fine.
We should all be cheering against Peru.
Yeah, who unfortunately won on Tuesday night as well. Yeah, they did.
Damn.
The beauty of this is it's a long season. Now, the downside of that is you need depth, and Will Bruin was terrific depth for the Sounders in the attack.
Well, but they're out of the U.S. Open Cup, so at least they won't have to play those matches.
They won't. It's true. But I don't think things are... And they'll also have an opportunity to add to the roster during the upcoming international...
Will they, though?
Yeah, to some extent.
They're not going to be able to have a Ladero or a Ruiz Diaz level signing.
But they don't need that. They need a Will Bruin level signing.
I don't think that's true.
What do you mean? They have Ruiz Diaz.
You're feeling that confident about this team otherwise?
I think when this team
depth
has been...
is the only issue?
Yes, I think when this
what
team
about
has
defense?
Been... Their expected goals have regressed to the mean. They were getting a little lucky during the strong start. They've been unlucky.
But Chad Marshall's retired now. He ain't walking through that door.
He's not.
That is the anchor of the defense.
But
he's gone.
When Javier Arriaga has settled in alongside Kim Keehee, I think that's going to be a fine center back pairing.
Okay.
I think things are going to be okay. It's a long season, which is why you would like to have depth. Speaking of Copa America, Nicolò Ladero scored the first goal as Uruguay beat Ecuador 4-0 in their Copa America opener. And on Tuesday night, Christian Roldan came on as reserve as the USA beat Guyana 4-0 to open Gold Cup play and shake off their dismal exhibition friendly performances going into Gold Cup. Guyana.
Guyana.
Yeah.
Is in the Gold Cup.
Yes.
All right.
I don't totally understand why they're in CONCACAF, but they are.
What do you mean? You think they should be in CONMEBOL?
Yeah.
That's still a thing, right?
That is still a thing. That's who plays the Copa America. I think they probably see CONCACAF as a more reasonable level of play for them.
Where's Peru, though?
Peru isn't CONMEBOL.
Oh, so he's playing in a different... There's Copa America and the Gold Cup.
Yes, those are both happening simultaneously.
Okay. And Guyana is in CONCACAF.
Yes.
And not in CONMEBOL.
Even though it is technically in South America.
You understand why I would think these were the same thing.
I suppose so.
It should all be one federation.
That actually probably would make more sense. In basketball, in FIBA, they just have FIBA Americas.
Yeah.
There's not a North America and a South America.
We're starting the petition right here. This is our other gripe with FIBA.
I don't know if the U.S. I don't think the U.S. wants that. I think it would be very bad for the U.S.'s chances of advancing to the World Cup in the future.
So who is...
If they had to compete against all of South America.
Who is Uruguay playing?
Uruguay is playing in Copa America. They're yes. playing in CONMEBOL.
Copa America is the CONMEBOL competition.
Yes. Except when they play Copa America. Centenario.
And hello.
And that included teams from CONCACAF.
All the rules go out the window when you're in Centenario.
Oh, when it's a Centenario.
But so who did
they're
they
also
play
playing
though?
Another Copa America next year, by the way, so that they can put it so that will
Centenario
then be the schedule.
Uno.
They will then start playing it every 4 years opposite the Euro.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. But instead of doing taking a 5-year break, they decided to play it back to back years. Soccer plays fast and loose with the rules, man. But yet they can't put the U.S. and France on opposite sides in the Women's World Cup bracket.
For get it together, FIFA.
For fuck's sake, FIFA.
If you're going to rig things, you might as well rig U.S. and France to be facing each other in the finals.
Get it together.
But when they restart, I feel like our soccer segments have just turned into me like sort of like complaining about the
everything.
No, just like soccer, like higher level soccer, like thoughts or whatever.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're starting it here. That CONMEBOL and CONCACAF should merge and play one tournament every 4 years opposite the Euro, because that would be fun.
I don't endorse this. Again, that would be bad for the U.S. Although the good news is the U.S. would host it every time.
We got the stadiums. You don't need to win. It's more fun playing against higher-level competition than winning.
I don't need them to win. I just want them to go to the World Cup, which, by the way, they didn't manage in CONCACAF last time. I don't know if you heard. Wasn't great.
So you're saying that if this were the case, more teams from CONMEBOL would go?
Yeah, because
the average CONMEBOL team is better than the average CONCACAF team.
Yeah, I mean, there's not very many of them. So like 50% of them already go, basically.
Yeah, they did.
And they generally do very well in the World Cup.
They really messed their pants on that last World Cup.
Well.
Anyway.
Rain FC drew 1-1 at Cheney Stadium on Sunday with the league-leading Washington Spirit. Jess Fishlock was named NWSL Player of the Week after scoring the equalizing goal in the 77th minute. They will be back on the road on Sunday to face Chicago. I don't know if we have any other thoughts on the Women's World Cup while we're here. Yeah.
Do you have other thoughts on them?
No, that was pretty much all I had, that the U.S. should lose to Sweden. The Seattle Storm closed out their 4-game road trip with a 74-71 win Friday at Washington and an 81-67 loss Sunday at Connecticut. The win at the Mystics, a rematch of last year's WNBA Finals, particularly impressive because the Storm lost point guard Jordan Canada in the first half due to a bone bruise in her left knee.
Was she back for the next game?
She was not. Blake Dietrich got the start on Sunday in
that
her place.
A pretty thin roster.
They are, when you're out with both Subert and Jordan Canada, who has played very well in Subert's place, you're in some trouble at point guard with just Dietrich, who was signed a couple weeks ago and hadn't seen much action since then. But she did a really nice job in Washington. The Mystics were without their starting point guard, Christy Tolliver, who got ejected in the first quarter after picking up a pair of technical fouls.
Wow.
Much to the Storm's benefit. But still an impressive win. The Storm came from behind in the fourth quarter against a really strong Mystics team. So that was a good one, and it ensures that they concluded this road trip above 500 at 5-4, despite having played 7 of their 9 games so far on the road. And that will start evening out this weekend as the Storm are back home in a pair of different venues. On Friday, they'll host the LA Sparks in at at the Angel of the Winds Arena in Everett. And then on Sunday, they will play their first game this season.
Try not to gamble too much.
At Alaska Airlines Arena. It's still not Tuxedo. No, still not Tuxedo. At Alaska Airlines Arena, Heckhead Pavilion on the UW campus, where they will play most of their games.
Is it their first game at Heckhead?
It is. Yeah, now that the quarter is over at UW, they'll be.
Oh, that's why they weren't playing presents. There?
I assume so. Oh, in terms of the schedule.
Because it's like some intramural basketball games? Like, what was happening?
Again, much like the technicalities of selling beer across state lines, I don't know exactly what was going on at the UW gym, but I know that they weren't playing any games there until
Jake
Sunday.
And Connor had it reserved for the games? Like, what are you talking about?
On Friday, I'd say I expect that Storm coach Dan Hughes will be back on the sidelines for the first time. 5 weeks after surgery to remove a carcinoid tumor from his digestive tract, he will address the media on Thursday. So presumably it will be to announce he's back. That's kind of been the timetable they've been thinking for him. For the Storm's efforts last week, forward Natasha Howard was named WNBA Player of the Week for the second time so far this season. I think out of three times they've named a Player of the Week.
So is Natasha Howard an MVP candidate?
She is an MVP candidate.
Wow.
I haven't updated the WNBA wins above replacement player stats in a while, but she's right there at the top for sure.
Wow.
Yeah, she's been awesome. The Storm will on Friday presumably face Candace Parker, who made her 2019 debut on Tuesday for the Sparks after missing the first 4 weeks of the season due to a hamstring injury.
Candace Parker's still good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she didn't have a great last season. You know, the Sparks in general didn't, but she's still one of the league's top players for sure. I don't know if there's anything to say about the Seahawks this week. It really doesn't seem to be any Seahawks news at this point. This is kind of the dead period of their offseason. Last week's...
There's like four or five dead periods in the NFL offseason.
Fair. Last week's minicamp was the last like team get-together before training camp begins. They did announce the training camp will start on August 25th. So, or July 25th, I should
That's
say.
That's kind of early.
A little early.
The season starts sort of early this year, right?
Yeah, I guess it's relatively early.
Maybe just by a couple days.
I mean, it's just basically a matter of when Labor Day is. And this year, Labor Day is on the 2nd. So, therefore, the first Sunday after that is relatively about, like, the 1st is obvious. If the Labor Day is on the 1st, that's the earliest.
Labor
the start
Day
of the NFL.
Has to be in September.
Yes.
Labor Day is the first Monday in September.
That is correct.
Okay.
I don't know what that falls under, but... It's Peltoncast something.
So this is the second earliest that the NFL season could start.
That is correct.
So it makes sense that they would start training camp a little bit early.
Yes.
The DK Metcalf hype.
Out of control?
It's out of control. Like, it's funny because it's almost like we're talking... Like, look, I think DK Metcalf will probably be a good player at some point. But the
probably
idea...
Probably not as a rookie.
Well, I mean, it's hard to think of... any wide receiver who is that good of a player as a rookie. We're talking anybody.
You can come up with a few. Saints receivers, I feel like, have been pretty good as rookies.
Tight end Marcus Colston.
Yes. but Michael Thomas was pretty good as a rookie, wasn't he?
But, like, it's few and far between for receivers who are
exceedingly
impact players,
rare.
Especially on good teams as rookies. It is a very rare thing. And I feel like the expectations for DK Metcalf...
Or to score a touchdown in every play and stiff arm all the players on the field and then tear off his jersey to reveal his impressive muscled chest.
Uh-huh.
And then get drafted by the Seahawks. And then Pete Carroll does the same on the sidelines.
Those are the expectations. this is that time of year. We're going to be excited about players like this, but it's just be careful. It's a be careful about getting too much hope up for a rookie wide receiver who also was not a first round draft pick, was not a top five pick wide receiver. We're talking about somebody who they got relatively deep into the second round.
Was it all that productive in college? All of these things apply.
And like, I would love to be proven wrong, but it's just seeing all of it. And I'm like,
hey, better to be pleasantly surprised than to go in with high expectations and be disappointed.
There we go. So you're saying I should go in. Very muted expectations.
Pessimist is always either right or pleasantly surprised.
We should be approaching the situation as if DK Metcalf is a second round draft pick rookie wide receiver.
Yes.
Because that's what the fuck he is. I don't care how strong he is. I don't care how built he is. And also, like, realistically, none of this shit matters right now.
That is also true.
Like, anything that he's doing in, like, OTAs, it's, like, great.
That is not going to stop Seahawks Twitter from getting excited.
But it's a thing where I keep seeing it, and I find myself getting a little bit too excited, and I have to remind myself, like, the Seahawks had maybe the most productive wide receiver in the NFL last year.
Yeah. Most, I wouldn't say productive, because productive to me involves volume as well. The most efficient wide receiver in the NFL last season.
They had maybe, but all, they had a productive and most efficient wide receiver.
Yes.
In the NFL. And just like losing Doug Baldwin is a big deal, and there's a lot of opportunity for players to emerge because of that, but I'm just not fully convinced that it's going to be DK Metcalf as a rookie.
We agree on this one.
So that's the only takeaway that I have from Seahawks OTAs.
Just to rein pessimism.
Just be cool. You know what I mean?
I mean, I agree with you. I guess Taylor Luckett was number one in DR, so he was pretty damn productive.
Wow!
I concede that point to you. You're going to put on sunglasses to celebrate.
I want to take them off Caruso style at some point.
It doesn't work well on a podcast. People can't see that except me.
You'll know, though. That's all that really.
You did once. You did.
Nobody listens to this podcast. We're just doing it for each other.
You, for a while, did threaten to do a video of the Pelton cast, didn't you?
Me?
I feel like that was a thing, wasn't it?
Not actually. We were just talking about the live broadcast of the Pelton cast, as seen on Fox Sports Northwest.
It's Root Sports Northwest.
Oh, sorry. Root Sports Northwest, Tuesdays from 11 p.m. to 12 p.m. You're not watching that?
I DVR it.
I've got like 40 of them saved up on my DVR.
Just waiting for the right moment.
I'm going back. Them. Once we do a Jan Reviews Las Vegas Food Pod, then I'm going to actually go back and watch it.
Another thing you've been threatening for a while.
Everybody wants that. Okay. Can nobody's listening at this point, but if you are out there listening, we need a poll. We need a Twitter poll.
But if people will just reply to the poll, we need people to just reply without there being any prompt.
Do you? Why? What do you mean?
To prove that they actually listen to this segment.
We don't need people to prove that they're listening to the podcast because we know they don't.
hopefully Devour doesn't.
Devour stopped listening after the very beginning. They heard us talk joking about the swag of a 16-ounce can. They're already offended. But would you, as the listener, want to hear our mom Jan's reviews of food in Las Vegas and descriptions of the food that she's eating in Las Vegas, knowing that she saw a $5 Dairy Queen gift card in my car and said to me, I was really wanting to go to Dairy Queen in Las Vegas? She said that. She was telling me about all the restaurants that she went to, which I'm not going to name because I don't want to spoil the pod.
No.
And she was like, oh, she saw the gift certificate. She was like, oh, I really wanted to go to Dairy Queen. And I was like, in Las Vegas? And she's like, in Las Vegas. And I was like,
you know, they have one in Burien. And in Renton.
I think that.
Actually, that's technically in Kent.
Also, Jan's description, she's like, we had two expensive days eating and two cheap days eating. The expensive days were eating like a $26 buffet at lunchtime, not dinner time, because if you get in at lunch, they let you stay through dinner. This is the kind of stuff you could be hearing when we have Jan on to review Las Vegas food.
I mean, what is that if not a sneak?
If she... Jan invented the sneak. If Jan saw what our bill was at Momofuku the last time that we went in Vegas...
Oh, you should.
She would have caught on fire. It was, and also just the amount of food, because you can't really take food home with you in Vegas. So if she would have known.
Don't tell that to me when I went to Momofuku in Vegas for the first time, because I ate lunch the next 2 days off of, it was the pork shoulder, I believe, that we did.
I'm considering the alternative cost of every meal, and I know that there's fun Vegas food out there.
It's true.
Oh, wow. She has Shake Shack takes two. Just remember that, people. She has takes about... You can hear Jan's takes about Shake Shack. Let us know if that's a thing you want to hear. Because they are good. They are spicy.
So now that we've established that no one is listening to the podcast, let's talk about the main event, which is the NBA draft coming up on Thursday. First, quickly a note that the Huskies did last week make the transfer of Jerron Brooks, the Garfield product, from USC official, and said in there that he will sit out the 2019-20 season. So it doesn't sound like any release to make him immediately eligible is forthcoming. But we are, as we record this, less than 2 days away from Thursday's NBA draft, where we'll find out where Matisse Thybulle is drafted and whether Jalen Noel is drafted. And so we've talked a fair amount about this on the podcast.
It's looking like he's going to meet a Matisse Thybulle.
Stuart. I assume the listener realized that Tristan ripped off his glasses, Caruso style.
Cue the who? No, I was trying to come up with the Caruso thing. Anyway.
So the latest mock draft, Sam Vecenie at The Athletic has Thybulle going 24 to Philly and Jalen Noel going 48 to the LA Clippers. Which would reinforce the idea of the Clippers as Seattle's team, I think. Jonathan Givony, my colleague at ESPN Plus, has now, later today in his update, this changed over the course of Tuesday, dropped Thybulle from at one point he was 28 to the Warriors, now 33 to the Philadelphia 76ers out of the first round, and Jalen Noel undrafted, as he has been most of the time in the ESPN Plus mock draft.
I think that that might qualified Jonathan Givony as a hater.
I think that qualifies him as going by the information that's available to him. I would be a little surprised still if Thybulle dropped out of the first round.
The
but
idea of him being a second round draft pick at this point is really surprising to me.
It is. We talked before the pre-draft combine that I attended in Chicago about the rumors that Thybulle had a promise based on the fact that he did not attend the combine and has not worked out for teams. And it kind of seems like the prevailing wisdom now is more that that was a plan by Thybulle and his agents, the Goodwins, longtime Seattle ties, to make people think that there was a promise out there for him and that that promise may not actually exist.
So why... If you are the Goodwins or whatever, I'm assuming Matisse Thybulle didn't hatch this plan on his own.
Probably not.
If you're the Goodwins, what is the logic here by doing that, if there isn't a promise?
The logic is teams will think that you have a promise from someone else and try to get ahead of that team.
So they'll be like, oh, it was the Thunder. Oh, it was the Sixers. Oh, it was the Blazers. Oh, it was the Warriors. One of those teams.
Right.
So they'll be crunching the numbers, be like, okay, it was that team. We're going to jump ahead of them to get him.
Yes.
But it does feel like... If over time Jonathan Givony is hearing that there wasn't actually a promise, it seems very likely that NBA teams also are hearing that.
Right. And maybe the team that has promised him is just doing a great job of keeping it quiet so far. So there's certainly not consensus about it. I mean, it's just tough to know what to think. And of course,
there's not consensus about basically any pick after what, like,
yeah, but this is different. This is consensus about, like, is it 100% that Matisse Thybulle is going to go to some team?
I don't think that there's
not, like, who knows what can happen
draft where you're like, yes, that person is going there. Is it when we're talking about a pick that is in the 20s on?
No, but, I mean, sometimes these promises get sniffed out.
Yeah.
And, again, for Thybulle to have completely shut things down, either A, there's a promise, or B, they want people to think there's a promise. Those are the only two possibilities.
He's not going to teams either.
I don't think so.
So he didn't do the camp in Chicago.
The combine, yeah.
The combine in Chicago. And he's not working out for teams?
I don't believe so.
They have closed up shop.
Yep.
Wow. There must be a promise. I mean, if there's not, that is a bold take. Like, that is bold action.
I mean, sometimes it can be valuable to, like, have the scarcity of information. Like, that can actually make teams want you more. Now, I think that's probably a less...
4 years of college.
Exactly. That's a less useful option for someone who's a four-year senior. And especially because of the fact that you are that experienced, you'd probably go into workouts and acquit yourself quite nicely against other players.
This is not Darius Garland playing six games. This is like Matisse Thybulle, who has played with two different coaches and two different systems. Like, there's information about Matisse Thybulle. Matisse Thybulle is a known commodity.
I think Portland is an interesting possible destination for Thybulle. You know, they can always use additional wings. May not be able to, who knows whether they'll be able to re-sign Rodney Hood this summer after he played such a key role for them in the playoffs. Al-Farouq Aminu, I would expect, will probably not be back in Portland at this point because of
tax reasons.
Think about
how many role players are not going to be back in Portland.
Seth Curry very possibly will not be back. So, yeah, their wing rotation could look totally different next year.
Between those three, that's a lot. I mean, we're talking about your all of a sudden it's going to be Anfernee Simons is going to be playing significant minutes.
I think they are counting on that. But, you know, they can maybe use someone who's more of a three in the mix. Jake Lehman's also, you know, he'll be a restricted free agent. He'll probably be back.
Hello.
Yeah.
the smile that you gave knowing how much I love Jake Lehman.
And they also have to think about next year.
I'm on Blazers Outsiders next year, I'm going to be arguing for Matisse to be playing more.
In 2020, both Maurice Harkless and Evan Turner will be free agents. So that's the remainder of their wing rotation that's not named CJ McCollum.
I mean, it just makes a lot of sense, Matisse in Portland. As like both looking at the regional factor about it, the fact that they need wing players, experienced wings who can play right away.
I think the Warriors could also be a fit for the same reason. Obviously, with Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant injured, they have more need for wing players who can come in and contribute immediately, like Thybulle could in that part of the draft, if he gets to there. And the other thing we should note about him going 33 to Philly in that Gavoni mock draft, whether he goes 24 to Philly or 33 doesn't really matter, or even 34.
Doesn't it matter a lot contractually, though?
Not really at this point. You get pretty similar contracts as a high second-round pick to what you get as a late first-round pick.
Okay, so that's not a huge deal.
No. I mean, it's maybe a slightly worse for him, but it's not a substantial difference.
But the length is about the same now.
You'll often get at least 2 years guaranteed, which is all rookies are guaranteed, or first-round picks, rather, are guaranteed.
First-round picks are guaranteed two with a team option for two more.
Yeah, and those are more favorable to the rookie because the team has to decide the previous October whether to pick up the option, so it's very rare that you see a third-year option decline. But some players in that part of the draft now are getting three-year guaranteed contracts.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So they're basically being treated as first-round picks in a way. Interesting. What do you think about Philadelphia as a destination?
They've been...
Both of these mock drafts had him going to Philadelphia,
yeah,
right?
They've been probably the team that's most linked to Matisse Thybulle over the course of the last 4 months.
I mean, they've had so much success with Husky players. I see why.
Hey, Tony Roden had his moments there.
That's what I was talking about. Did Todd McCullough play in Philly?
He sure did.
Yeah, he had some monster years. Steal in the draft.
If not for the Charcot-Marie tooth syndrome that ended his career... I mean, he made it to the... He led them to the finals. Actually, I think by the time he had that, he was in New Jersey, had signed with the Nets.
Uh-huh. And I also, even if had he been on Philadelphia, I definitely would have described him as leading them to the finals.
Yeah, when I presented very little to do with it.
In as much as Vincent Askew led the Sonics to the finals in 95-96.
I'm just saying, Todd McCullough definitely had a better true shooting percentage than Owen Iverson did. He fits their needs. They've liked players like that in the past. It would make a lot of sense. I think that there was a little less Thybulle buzz after the whole promise thing came up, even though Sam Vecenie thinks that they could have been a team that promised him and could kind of couch that on the fact that they could still bring in prospects seemingly for the 24th pick, but they're actually for, you know, their picks in the second round.
Well, if they have a pick high in the second round and late in the first round, that kind of makes sense.
Yes. So, I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, the reality is picks in the early second round can be gotten, right?
Yes.
Picks in this draft can probably be gotten anywhere four on.
I mean, they'll be tradable, yes.
But do you think that there's going to be a lot of movement in this year's draft? Because there's sort of like... there's not sort of like very clear tiers between players after you get past maybe the first two or three.
But that can also lead teams to stay put and think that, you know, okay, we'll just take whoever of this group is still available. So I don't know if that necessarily creates more movement.
I feel like if you're a team that wanted to draft Matisse Thybulle and you wanted to get to a pick 20 through 35, like, you'll be able to do that relatively easily.
22 from the Celtics or 20 from the Celtics seem pretty available since they have three first-round picks, especially if you wanted to give them a future first-rounder.
Highly protected.
Yes.
That's interesting. Maybe I would go out with another bold prediction. You're going to hear Truth Hurts by Lizzo as bumper music in the NBA draft broadcast on ESPN.
Yes.
And also... Matisse Thybulle will be drafted with one of those Boston picks.
Well, that is a prediction.
I'm 20 not or 22.
Willing to make that as well.
So if you had a guess right now, I guess percentage chances that Matisse goes in the first round.
I still think it's like 70%.
What team is going to draft? If you just had to like wild guess, who I guess if to put this into terms,
which
team
is most likely to draft?
Which team percentage wise is most likely to draft Matisse Thybulle?
Philadelphia.
Really? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm surprised about that. Both of these people had Philly in their mock draft.
Exactly.
And then what about
just because there's multiple shots at it?
What about Jalen Noel?
I think the situation is looking slightly better for Jalen Noel. It's interesting. Almost all the international prospects in this year's draft withdrew. There's only seven non-automatic, or I may be misremembering the number. It's like a single-digit number of non-automatic entrants that are left in the draft.
What do you mean automatic entrants?
So you're automatically entered in the draft when you're 22, the year that you turn 22 as an international player. Anyone younger than that has to actually declare for the draft. And so virtually all of those guys withdrew. And that seems like there may not be as many of the European stash prospects in the second round as there usually are.
Interesting. So Why do you think that is?
I don't have a good feel for it.
They just did.
But I think there's, you know, in the past, agents might want to get their players into the draft as young as possible and then kind of hope they went undrafted and then could be free agents down the road. Mm-hmm. Now it seems like there's more of a desire with those international prospects to get them in the first round to organizations that are really going to value them.
What international players are even projected in the first round?
Seko Doumbouya, French forward, will be in the lottery most likely. Goga Bitadze, a center.
Not a lot, though. This is not
he'll
a
be in the top
20. Draft.
No, it is not a particularly international draft. And then also Luka Samanich, I think, will probably go in the first round at the end.
Another Luka?
Yes.
Wow! Is that with a K or a C?
K.
So I remember the last time we were in sort of a similar situation with a Husky player that we were really monitoring.
Isaiah?
Was Isaiah.
Yeah.
And I had pick after pick after pick. It was just like international player, international player, international player. Like names that I never heard of before, right? I mean, like, can you look up that draft? How many consecutive international players were drafted before Isaiah? Because it felt like it was 30. Like the entire second round was international players. And then boom, there goes Isaiah Thomas, who's clearly the best player in that second round.
I'm pretty sure they were not all international players.
It was a lot, though. It was
a different era.
And things have changed that much?
Of the last seven picks in that year's draft, five of them were international players. I guess that's true. Targe or Tenge Ngombo, the ineligible player that was drafted by the Minnesota Timberwolves.
He was an ineligible player.
Went ahead of Isaiah Thomas.
What do you mean?
Well, he was actually like 28 and using a fake name.
Okay, so these are players. There actually are some like reasonable players in here, but
each one more at 55 was pretty solid.
That's kind of a steal, but just I remember watching that, and you're like, okay, wait, don't scroll.
Oh, are you going to talk bad about Davis Bertans now?
No, okay, so he's clearly
Davis Bertans.
There actually are
Spurs
like
MVP and Bojan Bogdanovic. Those are the other international players who went ahead.
Wait, which Bojan is that?
This is the Pacers Bojan,
the good Bojan.
Yeah.
Wow, there are some pretty solid players in that second round.
He's the only Bojan. The other one is Bogdan. They're both Bogdanoviches, but
aren't they,
one
aren't they both pronounced Bojan though?
No, the other one is pronounced Bogdan.
That's the Kings one?
Yes.
Okay, but you're watching and you're like, okay, Milan Makian is drafted, and then Chukwudiebere Maduabum.
Chuchu Maduabum.
Do you know him?
He
did he
good
ever play
in
an NBA game?
He did not know.
Targe Ngombo, who literally was ineligible to be drafted.
That is accurate.
Ater Mojok.
Majok.
I ever play an NBA game?
No. Then you can tell whether they, it says on Basketball Reference here, whether they played.
And
none
then Adam Hanga
did.
Never played an NBA game.
Yeah.
And then we have Isaiah Thomas, who was an MVP candidate for a season.
That is correct.
I'm like, what in the hell? So the last time we were in the situation.
So you're saying that Joe Noah is going to be an MVP candidate?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that it's a different climate, though, because there aren't going to be so many international players. And
it's
that's
also a different climate.
A good thing for Jalen Noel.
Two-way contracts didn't exist at this point. And so now, most, as we've talked about, most of the players who go in the bottom 10, maybe even the back 15 of the second round, are going to be guys who are willing to agree to two-way contracts.
Which he probably would be.
One would think he probably will. So at this point, I think it's probably like 60-40 that he gets drafted.
All right. Do you have any sort of team in particular that you have a feel for?
No, at that point in the draft, first off, it is likely that it's some team that buys their way into that pick than the actual team that has it right now.
Some random team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess we hope it's the Clippers.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really have no preference whatsoever.
We'll be sure to break it all down next week on the Pelton Cast, along with perhaps Jan's food takes.
Not perhaps.
No, definitely.
You know the listener's going to want to hear those.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just talking about the logistics.
I'm teasing that she wanted to go to Dairy Queen in Las Vegas. People need to hear these takes.
On that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
There's something on my sister's here.
What kind of car is that? That's like a drag car?
Yeah.
No.
So you decided to interrupt this podcast to ask me if I knew what was on your shirt?
That's a Formula One car, for the record.
Oh, Formula One car. Yeah, yeah, I know about cars. That is an automobile, correct?
I'm black.
The screen is black on the phone?
Yeah.
You think this is funny?
So you've taken the microphone from me now?
Mateo, what do you think is the song of the summer?
Yeah. Honey Pie.
Wow, Honey Pie by Johnny Utah.
Huh.
That is a wild card take for a 2-year-old.
Tristan, you're not going to get the microphone back, as it turns out.
Yeah.
I've been replaced.
Mateo's the co-host of the podcast now.
Yes.
Do you have any M's hot takes?
Yeah.
What are they?
And one of the hockey guys fell down out ice hockey.
Oh.
Save it for when the hockey team gets here. Hockey correspondent.
He really is wrestling the microphone away from you.
Stop.
Stop trying to take the microphone?
Yeah.
It's yours?
Yeah.
Tay, I feel like it
How might... How long have you been hosting this podcast, Mateo?
I feel like it might be past your bedtime to be on this podcast.
No.
Are you sure?
No, I don't want to go to my bedtime. I have to do my podcasts.
Can I get a thanks for listening?
No.
He has to do more, so he can't say things. What do you want to do podcasts about?
To team out hockey with the hockey umpire.
What players do you have for your little tiny head guys in football?
There's 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, but which players?
Baker's at a restroom.
Baker's at a restroom?
Yeah.
That's Baker Mayfield?
Yeah.
Who else do you have?
I have the Bears.
The Bills?
No, the Bears.
Oh, who do you have for the Bears?
Patrick.
No. You have Jordan Howard, now Philadelphia Eagle Jordan Howard.
So what's that? I have 2 team out hockey, and I have okay? 2 team out baseball.
The level of analysis about hockey and baseball is pretty similar to what we would be providing.
This is way more talk about it than you'd normally get on the Pelton Cast.
The Petra has 1 foot, and Grandma has 2 have the stand on and the other leg on.
Maybe sit a few plays out here.
Yeah.
You're rambling now.
Yeah, the guy that holds the bat.
The hockey stick?
No, the baseball bat.
Is that called a batter or the pitcher?
The pitcher.
Can you give me the microphone back and go to sleep? It's an aggressive microphone.
Yes, it's way past your bedtime, as a matter of fact.
No, my microphone.
Do you want the iPad and I'll take the microphone?
Yeah.
Okay. Here, take the iPad and go. I'll put you up to bed at the iPad, okay? Okay. Promo code's PeltonCast on Devour.
Yeah.
Okay, say thanks for listening. Just burped into the mic. This is one of the best guest appearances we've ever had. Say thanks for listening.
You won't do it.
The podcast can never end.